Welcome to Slice Your Age, episode 63.
Welcome to Slice Your Age, the show where we help you live stronger, thinner, healthier, and happier. Now, here's your host and personal coach, Dr. David Matto.
Hey, it's Dr. Dave with another episode of Slice Your Age. We're here to help you live stronger, thinner, healthier, and happier. And I am not going to do much of an intro today because I've got a very special guest for you, so I'm not going to waste your time. Wait a minute. I never waste your time. I usually at the beginning of every episode, I tell you how much I value you, and without you, I couldn't be doing this show. So I will take a couple seconds just to tell you that thanks for being a listener. And just to let you know, we've grown so much in just over a year. I mean, we have listeners from the United States, Canada, the UK, Japan, Korea, Saudi Arabia. If I didn't mention your country, I'm so sorry because we're in so many countries all over the planet. It would take me the whole episode to do. But I just want to, again, reinforce and tell you that I value you. When I first started on day one with Slice Your Age, I had two listeners and I called them mom and dad. But we've grown incredibly since then. So thanks so much for being with me. And I know you're going to love this episode, and it's not simply because I'm here in the studio sipping my chamomile tea and my cat's laying next to me. It's not the reason you're going to love this episode. The reason you're going to love this episode is I have an incredible guest with me today. I will tell you her name. Her name is Victoria Moran, and she is the Oprah-featured author of 11 books, including the international bestseller, Creating a Charmed Life, and her latest, which is Main Street Vegan, whose fans include Ellen DeGeneres and Bill Clinton. Wow. She's a certified holistic health counselor and plant-based nutrition specialist. Victoria hosts the weekly Main Street Vegan show on Unity Online Radio, and she's the director of Main Street Vegan Academy right there in New York City. I love New York. She is a veteran's age slicer. She is... It's okay if we mention her age. She is okay with that. She is 64 years old. Listen to this. She's the cover model on the current issue of La Fashionista Compassionista. It's an online vegan fashion and beauty magazine. So, wow, that was a great introduction. So let's bring her right in now. Victoria, thanks so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure. Not only a pleasure, it's an honor. I mean, somebody that coaches Ellen DeGeneres and Bill Clinton. I mean, come on, being on Slice Your Age, this is you're making my day, not only my day, but all of my listeners' day. So this is great stuff. So thanks for being here. Let's get right into it because we have so much to talk about. Last time I saw you personally, Victoria, you may remember it was just finished being a speaker at the Seed New York City, which is a vegan festival. And you spoke beautifully for the hour. And I came up to you and I said, Victoria, you've got to be on my show. And you shook your head. You said yes. And here we are now. So I really appreciate it. And so I finished reading Main Street Vegan quite some time ago. My wife, actually, I believe she's finished it. I saw your book on her desk just the other day, but I'm pretty sure she's finished it. But I know that when you started writing that book and speaking to your publisher, your publisher didn't really want to use the title Main Street, the word Main Street in the title of the book. And you had some type of a celebrity intervention. So explain to me and to my listeners what happened there.
I love that phrase, celebrity intervention. We need to bring that into the vernacular. Yeah, I think of it as a spiritual experience. When I got the idea for Main Street Vegan, I really just wanted to do something exceedingly helpful, and I was just inspired with exactly what that book should be and what it should be called, and we were fortunate enough to get a wonderful editor at Tarcher Penguin, and all was well until the day after the papers were signed, and my editor said, oh, by the way, we hate Main Street. And she said that it sounded like the Tea Party. Now, for those of your listeners who are in other countries, this country has become a little bit more divided in political theory than it was in years past. And she just thought that didn't sound midstream enough. But the whole point was for me, Main Street is totally midstream. I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, two blocks off Main Street. And I knew that it wasn't political. It was appealing. But there was nothing I could do, because when you write a nonfiction book, you sell it from a proposal. The publisher owns it. They can call it whatever they want to call it. So I tried to be a team player and write my book without the title that I wanted. But I was having a struggle with it. So one Saturday, my husband and I were walking up Broadway, and we saw someone so famous that we could recognize him from the back. You know, there aren't a lot of people like that. But this happened to be Michael Moore, the filmmaker. Now, I knew that he had liked an earlier book that I had written, a book called Fit From Within. He'd lost some weight with that, and it helped him, and he wrote about that in Oprah's magazine. So I just gave my card to the woman who was with him and said, just, you know, tell him I said hello, because he was signing autographs. And we went on up the street, and then I hear, Victoria! And Michael Moore is coming up the street after us, and we exchanged pleasantries. And he said, we really need to talk. We need to talk about food. So we started doing that. We started having phone conversations periodically. And in one of these conversations, I mentioned that the book that I was writing was supposed to be called Main Street Vegan. Publisher didn't like that. And Michael Moore said, it's a perfect title. He said, people think hippie street vegan or whole food street vegan. But Main Street Vegan, that's like to kill a mockingbird. I said, well, you think so? I think so. They can't stand it. He said, let me talk to them. So one of the amazing experiences of my life, and I must say I'm very blessed. I've had many amazing experiences. But this particular one was a three-way call with an Academy Award winner, my editor, and me. And he convinced her that it was a great title, and she convinced everybody else at the publishing house. And so Main Street Vegan has been not just a very successful book, thank you, God, and all the book muses, but it's also spawned so many other things. You mentioned the podcast and the Academy, and it means a lot to me. And I think getting veganism on Main Street or the High Street in the UK or just regular everyday people all over the world is a really important thing. And I've been so grateful to play a little tiny part in that.
Well, congratulations. And I have a feeling you're playing more than just a little tiny part, but congratulations and thanks for all the work that you've been doing for this. And the only question I have is, that's an amazing story, but how did you recognize Michael Moore from the back?
He always wears that baseball cap turned backwards.
Yeah, true.
And when you think about him, you know, I mean, his demeanor, his size, his posture, plus there were all these people around him and he was signing autographs.
That was the giveaway. That was definitely the giveaway right there. You know, and something very interesting, a lot of people tend to think that eating vegan, and you just kind of alluded to like a hippie type thing, or maybe even like some people might refer to it as like a left wing diet. But tell me what you think about it. I have a feeling you don't agree with that necessarily.
Oh, I think it's ridiculous. Well, first the hippie thing. Because I was alive during hippies. I wasn't quite old enough to be one, but I was certainly observing that whole cultural thing. I suppose if I'd run away from home, I could have been a hippie. But anyway, hippies were not vegan. They weren't even vegetarian. They just didn't like having regular jobs. So they often didn't have much money, and they ate things like brown rice and granola, which most people had not heard of at that time. So I think the brown rice and granola kind of got tied with the vegan thing. And then we're still living down this hippie reputation. And, you know, the left-wing thing is interesting. Probably the majority of people who want to do something different, something that's not traditional, something that in certain circles would seem to fly in the face of some of the traditional values. You know, the idea of my grandfather was a farmer and all my uncles are hunters and all that kind of thing. Probably there are some more people on the left than on the right who are making this choice. But here's what I think, that if we want to change the world, if we really want to make a difference for animals, if we want to save this planet from destruction, from global warming, loss of topsoil, depletion of all the fish in the seas, and if we want to really address healthcare and keep it from being a crisis, it seems like you almost can't say healthcare without adding crisis onto it, we can't just depend on the Unitarians and the NPR listeners and the people over here singing folk music. We've got to open it up and bring in everybody. And I don't care which side of some political aisle you're on, you have a heart. It depends on arteries not being clogged, and it can also open up to the suffering of others. So I am totally there to say, you know, bring me your politically diverse and diverse in every other way, and take a look at eating plants and loving animals and feeling better than you've ever felt in your life.
Now, you're 64 years old right now. How long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan 31 years.
31.
My daughter made me vegan. Yes. I've actually been vegetarian. Oh my gosh, so long. I stopped eating land animals in 1968, and I stopped eating all animals in 1969. But it was really hard to go vegan. I'd heard of vegan even then, but it was considered very weird and very extreme. And I was a practicing binge eater. And it was just too difficult to stand there in the convenience store and try to get my stuff that I wanted to binge on and have to read all those labels and find that most of the junk food had some kind of egg or dairy derivative in it. So I was a vegetarian, and I do things like vegan at home. And, you know, I was doing the best I could under the circumstances at the time. But I did make peace with that eating disorder, and I treated it just like an alcoholic in AA. I got recovery just like I would have for any other addiction, thank God. And if anybody's listening to this who has a problem like that, I believe that Overeaters Anonymous is just a gift from the divine. It doesn't even cost anything, and it is a lifesaver. And around that same time, my daughter was born. And I looked at her one day lying in her crib, all perfect and fabulous. And I thought, you know what? I want to give this little human being the best that I know of. And the best that I knew of then and now was a vegan way of life. On just every level, I knew this was the gift I wanted for her. And I knew that if I wanted it for her, I had to do it myself. So I took that wonderful 12-step principle of a day at a time and thought, you know what? I can be vegan today, and started renewing that day after day after day. And it has now been 31 years. And the results in terms of how I feel and how I look and how my life has turned out are beyond my wildest dreams.
What a great story. So it was your daughter that really got you to do that. And you didn't do it a little bit at a time. When your daughter was born, you just said, I'm going to be vegan right now. What would you say to people that say, I can't do it, it's too difficult, I love my cheese, I love my eggs, but maybe what I can do, maybe, is try a meatless Monday, and if I do it one day a week, that'll be okay. What would you say to that?
Well, I think any start is far superior to no start. And I had been vegetarian for all those years, so I really did have a long transitional period. I already wasn't having hamburgers and, you know, broiled salmon and all these other things that people get tied to. So I think that people make change in different ways. And one of the examples I give in Main Street Vegan is look at big changes you've made in your life. So, for example, if you were in a relationship that really was just not working, did you hang around in that thing until it had just drugged both people through the mud and then you finally got out of it, but you kept calling the person? You know what? You're the kind of person that is going to make changes gradually. But if you're the person who, the minute you saw that relationship going south, you said, okay, sorry, no offense, this is over, and you didn't send that person so much as a text after that, You can do the same thing with the eggs and the dairy. You can just walk away. So do know what kind of person you are. But if you do want to do this gradually, make the commitment to yourself that your goal is vegan and your process is gradual. If your goal is kind of sorta, you know what? Even kind of sorta in a statistical sense is going to help some, but why not help a lot? Why not give yourself the best?
If you could tell me one thing that being vegan for all these years has done for you and your life, what would you say it is, Victoria?
Oh, wow. I think the biggest thing is just being able to look an animal in the eye. When I go to a farmed animal sanctuary, my heart is breaking for all of the animals who are in the farm animal factory system. But I can look at this one who's been saved and know that I'm on his side or her side. I think that's the biggest in the overall sense. And then in a very personal sense, I think it has to do with the aging process. I can't believe this is 64. I mean, I'm better today than I was at 34. I mean, and I know it's different, and I know I'm 64, and I know, you know, what that entails in a chronological sense and a realistic sense and all that. And yet how I feel and how I move about in the world is better now than it was then. And when I look at other longtime vegans, particularly the ones who have eaten a lot of fresh foods, a lot of raw foods, juices, and they completely defy any stereotype of aging. I had a fellow on my radio show yesterday, an actor here in the city named Joel Brody. I do not know this man's age, but when I met him about a dozen years ago, he already had a long white beard and white hair, and he was just on the cover of The Atlantic in their October issue, which was about the new science of aging, and they had him on the cover skateboarding, and he was able to do this. Now, he's gone further than I have in the whole thing because he's actually been a raw fooder since 1971. But when I look at somebody like that, it inspires the heck out of me because that's what I want to do with the rest of my life.
I love it. You know, I'm a little bit behind you as far as age. I am going to be 60 in May, but my goal now, I bought a unicycle not that long ago, and I'm practicing riding a unicycle. And my goal is, but by the time I'm 60 years old, to be able to ride that unicycle all over the place. I feel the same way as you do. I feel so much better now at close to 60, 59 and a half right now, as I feel so much better than I did at 39 and a half. There's zero question. It's incredible. And I try to get the word out to my friends, my listeners, people I work with. It's an amazing way of life. And it sounds to me, from what you just said, is it about 50%, 50-50 as far as the ethical reason and the health reason for you? Because you did mention the animals first.
You know, sometimes I think it's 99% animals for me. When I talk to people, like I was talking to a gentleman the other day who said, when I talk to people like you who are really interested in people eating local and things like that, and I thought, I'm not that interested in people eating local because I've seen the statistics that I can't state them perfectly because my memory for numbers has never been very good, but it's huge. The difference between being vegan once a week and eating local all the time, you do so much more for the environment being vegan one day a week. So when I think of it that way, I do this for the animals, pure and simple, end of story. However, I'm really, really interested in health. It's been my hobby for a really long time because I had the eating disorder and I wanted to be healthy and I wanted to not be obese So I read and I studied and I learned a lot, and I started writing for health magazines in my late teens, and I interviewed a lot of experts and thought if I could just get close enough to this person, maybe some of their expertise would rub off and then I'd be able to be healthy too. So I read a lot about health. I find it absolutely fascinating. So I health is terrific. But if somebody said to me, here's where I think you can really tell who is a health vegan and who is an animal vegan. It is when times are tough, such as you're in an airport. Now, things are better in airports than they used to be, and sometimes you can get food that is both vegan and health-promoting, and it's great. But there are some airports or some terminals in airports that are just wretched. And that's when I have my twice a year order of French fries. Now, somebody who was trying to eat a good diet just for their health, that's when they might have their twice a year broiled salmon. And that's the difference. I know that my arteries are not crazy when I have my twice a year French fries, but I will do that before I'll kill an animal. That's just where I come from with the thing.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to a woman last week. We go to an occasional vegan potluck dinner, which, by the way, they're awesome. We have a great time and meet so many great people there. But this woman I was talking to said to me that even if they found out tomorrow that eating a vegan diet was not as good as eating a non-vegan diet, she would still continue with the vegan diet because of the animals. I feel the same way. I could never in my life eat another animal or any type of dairy product or anything that comes from an animal. I could not do it, no matter what.
Well, Mahatma Gandhi said the same thing about being vegetarian. He said that if his doctor told him that he had to have meat or die, he would die. And he was told back in those days they didn't have soy milk and all these things that we have now, and he had evidently destroyed his digestive system with too many of the pungent curries of his homeland. And so by the end of his life, it was hard for him to digest a lot of food, and so his doctor told him that he had to have goat's milk. So he had pet goats that he took care of and made sure their offspring were cared for. And he called having to drink that goat's milk the tragedy of my life. Here's a man liberated a huge nation, but for him, drinking the milk of even a well-cared for goat was the tragedy of his life. That's the kind of vegan I want to be.
Same. That's the same. What a story that is. Now, speaking of the animals, you know, you and I both know that we get these questions all the time. And some of the common ones, of course, are, hey, where do you get your protein? Or things like, where do you get calcium? And, you know, both of us know how to answer those. And I've talked a lot about those questions and answers on the show before. But there's one in particular that I've been getting a lot lately. And I wanted to run by you, especially as an animal lover, to an animal lover. When somebody says, well, what about humane meat? How do you answer that, Victoria?
Well, I say, yeah, humane meat, that's great. That's the kind you get from tofurkey and Gardein and field roast. That is really humane. Now, of course, those are the vegan products that have the taste and the texture of meat. Now, a lot of people put those down because they say, oh, they're processed, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, but you know what? We get used to flavors and textures as small children. And so if eating those products once in a while over time or quite a bit in the beginning help with the transition, then hooray. We had our tofurkey last week for Thanksgiving, and it was absolutely fabulous and amazing. And I'm so happy that those things exist. But to get back to what you're asking, I know that people believe that if they purchase food that is labeled humane or free range or grass fed or some of these other terms, that it's all okay. There's so much that's wrong with that. First off, when we think about the history of vegetarianism, when we think about people who were vegetarian throughout history and why they did it, think of Pythagoras. Pythagoras was in ancient Greece. They didn't have factory farming. You could say that at that time, if any meat was ever humane, that was humane meat. Well, why didn't he eat it? Why would he not accept any student that would not become what we would today call a vegan and even an unfired, as he called it, a raw food vegan? Because he knew and believed that that kind of pain and suffering and the chemicals that were excreted by the animal at the time of slaughter were going to go into the person and be detrimental to the body and the mind. So we move on in history and we've got Leonardo da Vinci and probably St. Francis, and then we come into more recent history and we have Franklin and Thoreau and Emerson all were vegetarian for a while, and then other wonderful people, Isaac Bashevis Singer, did it consistently and completely before factory farming ever existed. So this is a really important thing. I mean, factory farming is a horrible evil, and I support every kind of move to make things better in that awful situation as long as it exists. But just raising animals for food, the animals always get the short end of the stick. Now, we talked about people whose grandparents were farmers. Well, my grandparents were farmers. They raised pigs and chickens in a little town called Hallsville, Missouri, back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And in the 50s, at least, I visited a few times and I saw the animals. And yeah, you know, they were running around, but they still had their tails docked. They were still castrated without anesthesia. The males were killed, the male chickens, because they couldn't lay eggs. So even in what we think of as the best of situations, it's not that good. So sometimes I think it's so much easier to just make a break. And these people will say, well, I only eat humane meat. And then I'll say, oh, so you never go out? Well, yeah, I go out. Well, what do you eat then? You eat vegan when you go out. No, it's just, it's really, it's a weak argument. However, and then I'll stop because I know as a radio host myself, these long answers are terrible. I just want people to understand that every creature wants to live. My favorite quotation probably of all time comes from the Jain saint Mahavira, and he said, to every creature, his own life is very dear. I believe that, and that's why I don't want to eat anybody.
Well, you're preaching to the choir, because I totally agree. And also, Victoria, never, ever on this show apologize for going too long, because what you have to say is so important. That's why we have you on here. So you could just keep talking and talking. I'm totally fine with that, just to let you know. Tell me a little bit about greens and juicing. I know you're a pretty big fan of both of those, and I'd like to hear like how you use greens and juicing, et cetera, and how do they fit into your life?
Sure. Well, when I started with all this in the vegetarian back in the late 60s and then vegan in the early 80s, I ate a very brown diet. I think all of us did who were into natural foods in those days. So we ate brown rice and brown bread and wheat germ and lentil loaf and nut patties and onion soup. It was just kind of all these shades of beige. And we felt good that we weren't eating white food. We weren't having white rice and white bread. And it certainly was a step up from that. But it didn't infuse vitality. I can remember in the early 80s, so I was probably vegan for about a year and a half at that point. And I was cooking, and my husband called from work and said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm killing food. I'm cooking food. And it was such a Freudian slip, but there was something in me that just knew that this sort of grain and bean diet, even though there's certainly nothing wrong with whole grains and beans, but for me, I need color. And once I realized that, that was when the real rejuvenation aspects of this way of eating entered in. So I had still some of that brown stuff, you know, for satiety and for just grounding kinds of foods. But so much more these days, my food looks like a rainbow. And what I always tell my coaching clients is I want your plate and your shopping cart to look like a Christmas tree. That means mostly green with splashes of other bright colors, because that's where you're going to get the phytochemicals, the antioxidants, and to my way of thinking, something even more important, and that is the life force energy. This is what the yogis call prana, the martial artists and the acupuncture people call chi. This is an energy that you're not going to measure in a laboratory, but when you start eating more of these bright, fresh, colorful foods, you're going to feel like a million bucks, and you just can't argue with that.
There's been a lot of controversy lately right on my Facebook page. If you go to it, David Matta, on my personal Facebook page, I've got a lot of friends and followers who are with me and support this type of lifestyle, believe me, and I love them. But I've got a few that kind of hang out there with me, and whenever I mention organic, you got to buy organic, they poo-poo me, and they start asking me for studies proving that organic is better. And so, Victoria, I want to ask you your opinion on that, because we're talking about greens and phytochemicals and all the veggies and the beautiful colors. Do you eat all organic produce, or how do you feel about that?
I do my very best to eat all organic. I'm fortunate that that's available and that I have some discretionary income and I'm able to do that. What I think causes people to get antsy about organic is it sounds special. And some people think that it's elitist because it does cost more than the stuff that's been sprayed. But I look at it in a couple of ways. You know, this generation, our generation, are certainly the one to follow, may not live as long as our parents. So I look at my parents' generation, your parents' generation, and they were eating meat and butter and sugar and white flour and all kinds of things that today we go, oh my gosh, don't. Well, I don't approve of that stuff, but they were eating that along with food that wasn't poisoned. And so even though the things that they ate may not have been the best, they had food from healthier soil. They had food that was organic before we ever used that term. And they had an advantage in that way. When we came along, the poison industry had come on the scene and was saying better living through chemistry. So we were raised on poisoned food. So I think that anything that we can do to turn that around, we really ought to do. I saw a speaker long, long time ago who really brought home the point. He had two apples, and he said to somebody that he'd picked out of the audience, here are two apples. Now, this one I will give to you for 25 cents. Now, this other one, you're going to have to pay 75 cents. So which one do you want? And the person said, well, I'll take the one that's only a quarter. And he said, okay, that's fine. And then he pulled a can of Raid insect spray out from under the table, and he sprayed that apple till it was all wet and nasty and handed it to her and said, that'll be 25 cents. And that's exactly what's happening. You know, we don't want to do that. Now, what if you really do have a very tight budget and it just makes a big difference? Well, you look at that Dirty Dozen and Clean 16 from what do you call that group? I always want to say Center for Science in the Public Interest, but it's the other one.
Physicians for Responsible Medicine.
No, it's the Environmental Working Group.
Okay, okay.
EWG.org. They have the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So these are the foods that should always be purchased organic or not purchased at all. And then the others that it doesn't really matter. I mean, avocados, for instance, have no natural pests. So whether it says organic or whether it doesn't, they're not going to be sprayed. So you can save some money that way. You can save money by buying in bulk, by buying directly from the farmer. There are all sorts of things you can do. And then obviously, if you stop buying junk food and animal food, you're going to have some money left over. So maybe you can invest some of that in organic. So yes, if you possibly can, Buy organic as often as you can, and certainly for the heavily sprayed items like greens and berries, and these are really, really healthy foods. We want to eat a lot of them, but they also tend to be some of the most heavily sprayed. So do the best you can, but try to get organic.
I'm looking at my Facebook page right now, and exactly two hours ago, somebody named Charles wrote on there, because we were having this discussion. He wrote, "You all do know that organic farmers use pesticides and insecticides too, right? And that often, because they are less effective, they have to use more of them. And that organic pesticides are not necessarily any less toxic than synthetic." He's asking this question. I honestly did not know how to answer him, Victoria.
Well, I don't either, because I'm not an agriculturist. I know if you talk to somebody like Howard Lyman, he could probably give you a really great answer.
Yeah.
All I know is that to get that organic certification, a farmer has to jump through a lot of hoops. So I'm going to trust that at least to an extent. Now, I'm certainly going to still wash the produce, because he's absolutely right. An organic farmer doesn't just plant seeds and, you know, do a dance and harvest the crops later on. So they do use certain kinds of pesticides that you want to wash off. But they also do a lot of other things. They do companion planting and different techniques that deter pests. And they plant their crop in healthier soil. We think so often that the only difference in organic and conventional produce is maybe organic we know is not going to be genetically modified, and then it's not going to be sprayed for pests. But there's also this issue of herbicides and of what goes into the ground, because any nutrition that you're going to get from that produce has to be first in the soil. How's the soil being nourished? Organic farmers rotate crops and do all of these very sensible, time-honored kinds of practices that farmers have known about forever and a day that keeps the soil fertile. The soil is not nearly as fertile as it was in past times. And so I think anything we can do to get the best quality produce is we ought to do for ourselves and for our families. And they have done studies showing that on average, organic produce is actually higher in nutrient value. But you know what? Honestly, David, I think we can spend so much time splitting hairs. We need to stop eating animals, and we need to eat real recognizable food, meaning a few of the treat foods over at the edges, but mostly stuff that grew up out of the ground that if you planted it at the end of the day, you'd get another plant. That's what that life force energy is about. Of course you want to eat food that is as poisoned as little as possible. Think of the guy and his can of Raid. But you do what you have to do in the circumstances. If you're just not eating animals and you're doing your best to get some color in your diet, hooray, hallelujah, you'll have enough energy to go out and do something good in the world. And that's really the point.
Well, I am with you. And fortunately, many of my listeners are with you and with me. And many are kind of sitting on the sideline listening, deciding over the last many months what they want to do. And we're getting more and more come on board with us. So It's a great thing. And I know something really exciting has come up alongside of your book, Main Street Vegan, and I think it's called Main Street Vegan Academy, something you're doing in New York City, where you actually train and certify vegan lifestyle coaches and educators. So tell us just a little bit about that, like who comes to the academy, what kind of things do you teach them, what do they learn there?
Yeah. Oh, it is just the coolest thing. I feel like a new parent, and like you just asked me about my baby, and I would love to tell you.
Sure.
Main Street Vegan Academy is such a gift. And you asked earlier on about the Michael Moore story. As soon as my editor called and said, okay, you've got your title, it's Main Street Vegan, all these ideas started popping about what that could mean. And one of them was Main Street Vegan Academy. And as soon as it came to mind, I knew that that was really a blessed idea. So what it is a 5.5-day intensive in New York City, as you say, And people so far have come from 8 countries. We've had people from as far away as South Africa and Australia and all across North America. And very different people. We've had people from their early 20s to their mid-70s, and people who are of all different kinds of professions. We've had one medical doctor, a couple of dietitians, a whole lot of yoga teachers, and just people. Some of them are about to retire, or they've been downsized in the corporate world, or they're young and just starting out, and they really want to do something for veganism. So everybody who comes here is very, very special. And people will say to me, oh, often, very, very often, well, why don't you put it online? Because then you could get so many more people. But what they don't understand is this is an experience. So I say to them, why do you go to a Broadway show? Why do you go and spend all that money to go out and sit in the cold for a pro football game that you could watch on TV? It's because that's an experience. And the experience of Main Street Vegan Academy is so magical that I never would have expected it. But that's really what happens. So the students come from all over, and it's a very small boutique program. Our maximum number of students that we can take each time is 16. So everybody gets to be very closely related to me. I mean, I become friends with everybody who goes through the academy. And our instructors are so generous that they become involved with all the students, and they offer their expertise and their website and their PowerPoint packs and all these things to the students. So some of the curriculum that we offer, we have a background in veganism. First, they have to read several books and listen to some podcasts to give them just a general understanding, which chances are they have already, but I just want to make sure. And so then we have nutrition 101 and nutrition for the life cycle. And this is taught by Marty Davey, La Diva Dietitian, who is a master's degree registered dietitian. We have Dr. Robert Ostfeld from the Montefiore Cardiac Wellness Program. He's a Yale and Harvard educated cardiologist who speaks to us about nutrition and heart disease. Then we have Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan from Our Hen House, who do animal rights and animal law, longtime animal proponents. Marianne is a professor of law at Columbia and Cardozo Law Schools. And then after we give them this foundation of what it is to be vegan, then we kind of add on and go beyond the food. So we have Joshua Katcher, who has a wonderful website called The Discerning Brute, discerningbrute.com. He's also a fashion designer, and he talks about the ethics of aesthetics. And so often I'll hear people, like especially one of my guys, will say, oh, God, they're going to have that fashion talk tomorrow. And then they always say to me at the end, that was the most fascinating thing I've ever heard, because we don't really understand how commerce, and I'm totally a capitalist. I'm not like saying there's anything wrong with commerce, but commerce kind of gets into our heads and tells us what we need to be. And so the fashion industry has had a lot of power. And even people who say, I don't care about fashion, are still influenced by it, by saying, you know, well, I need this and I need that and I have to have this other thing. And it's because we've been taught that. And very often the animals, again, get the short end of the stick. And then in addition to everything that we teach about the vegan lifestyle, we teach about marketing your business. So what we're doing are certifying vegan lifestyle coaches and educators. So we have classes in marketing and coaching techniques. One of our instructors is Michael Parrish Studell, who wrote the Shark Tank Jumpstart Your Business book. He was actually brought on by the Shark Tank people to do that and has just written their second business book. So we spare nothing to bring the best instructors that we can possibly get. And on top of it all, we do field trips because Disneyland for Vegans is right here in New York City. So we go not only to wonderful restaurants, but to Vogue Couture, where they have the wonderful fashions and winter coats. And Leanne Hilgart, the designer there, also lectures for us. We go to Mooshoes and an Indian spice shop and a raw food market. So people get these wonderful ideas, and some of them, if by the end of the course, it's like, oh, wait a minute, I don't really want to be a coach. I want to open an ice cream business, which somebody has done in Toronto, or I want to do vegan cowboy boots, which somebody has done in Dallas. So it's pretty magical.
I love your analogy. New York City, the Disneyland for vegans. I love it. If we want to find out more information, like your schedule and how the whole thing works, what's the best way that somebody can get in touch with you? Or is there a website that you recommend going to?
Yeah, sure. They can just go to mainstreetvegan.net and click on Academy. All the information is there. We have 5 programs scheduled for 2015, starting in April. And would just love to hear from some of your age slicers.
I have a feeling you will, and maybe the head age slicer as well. So I'm really, really interested. It sounds great, Victoria. Listen, I'm looking at the clock, and the time just slipped away way too fast. It's unbelievable when you get into a topic, and I've got a guest as great as you have. We get so much information, but the time just slips away. I wanted to talk to you about one of your favorite topics, and I think you know what I'm going to say, it's aging. And that's what I saw you speak about at the Seed in New York City. So although we're out of time for today, would it be okay if I invited you back and we'll do another episode next week? And we can, because I really want to get into that. And I know my listeners want to hear more about how to age gracefully, how to be healthy at any age. Can we do that?
That would be my pleasure.
Fantastic. So what I'll do, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody today, right now. Thanks so much for being on Slice Your Age. And I want to thank you, Victoria Moran, for being with us. But don't go anywhere, because next week, as she just promised, I'm going to hold her to this now, we're going to have Victoria back, and we're going to talk about how you can age gracefully, how you can be really, really healthy at any age. And she's a living example, because she's 64 years old. I saw her on stage not that long ago. And if I hadn't known any better, I would have guessed that she was in her, maybe, I want to be honest, I don't want to say she looked like she's in her 20s, but if I would say early 40s, I think that's a really, really nice compliment. And I think, and got somebody 64 to have somebody tell them they look like they're in their early 40s, I would take it all day long. So we're going to find out all of Victoria's secrets next week. So make sure you come back with us. And by the way, everything we've talked about, if there's a website that Victoria talked about, her book, we're going to reference that on our show notes. So make sure you hang out with us at sliceyourage.com, because if you missed anything, you're not sure how to spell something, it'll all be there on sliceyourage.com. Until next week, I'm Dr. Dave. Victoria, thanks so much. And don't go anywhere too far, Victoria. We're going to get you back next week, okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Slice Your Age. You are no longer alone on this journey.
Slice Your Age.